How did Charlie Parker's Now's the Time ignite your interest in jazz while in college?
Well, I was primarily studying classical music. I hadn't really heard a lot of jazz, but I had a very good foundation in music theory and harmony and a basic understanding of how music is structured at that point. But when I heard Charlie Parker, I just heard it all come together in the sense that he wasn't just manipulating harmony, it was really telling his own story. It was a real spiritual connection to the science of music. I really heard something that was on another level, I thought, coming through. And so as people started to explain to me what was involved, I was fascinated, one, spiritually, but then also intellectually, the requirements for a musician to really play jazz. You really have to have great ears, and you have to completely understand harmony and be able to be very witty and manipulated it on the spot. So all of that I just found to be a challenge also. So it blew me away.
Why do you call it a spiritual connection for the principle of music?
Spiritual in the sense that it's very much about self-expression. Self in the singular sense, but also in the broader sense in terms of a group of people coming together to express their commonality. So it's definitely beyond just the science of music. Like, I could take my knowledge of harmony and piece together an entire record tonight that may not necessarily be reflective of an experience that I'm going through. It would be reflective of my harmonic knowledge. So there is music that's out there that's sort of very intellectually heavy, but sort of absent of some spirituality. And I always think that the best music has the perfect combination of both.
What do you call the thump element?
Well, that's just making sure that the music feels good. Even no matter how advanced it gets, when it's time to dance, when it's time to make the music feel good to people, that's what I call that thump element. You can tell because you can see it in people's faces, and you can see that no one can sit still. And it's just this connection between what's going on the bandstand and what's going on out in the audience. I always felt that jazz is a contemporary art form, and it should always have the sound of modern times in it. Otherwise, it's sort of a contradiction to the definition of jazz itself if it doesn't sound modern.
How can percussion instruments prepare you to play other instruments on the bandstand?
That's an interesting question. Well, certainly the rhythmic concept of playing hand-to-hand, left-right, left-right, and tapping out rhythms is one of the most natural approaches to rhythm, second only to using your voice. So if you have that in your background, you generally will probably have a stronger sense of rhythm and time and feel. So when you pick up another instrument, you're bringing all of that energy with you, that experience of really staying physically connected to the rhythm. His rhythm is not, again, it's just not this intellectual concept where we see these mathematical equations on a piece of paper. It really is connected to the way we move, the way we walk, the way we dance, everything in life. It all comes together. You can sort of watch the way someone walks and you have a good idea of their sense of rhythm.
How can a Fender Rhodes enhance a piece, but keeping in mind that electronics can also nip the subtlety of acoustic instruments as well?
Well, a Fender Rhodes is sort of it's a unique instrument in and of itself. It's really not an electric instrument. It's really not an acoustic instrument. That is the ultimate perfect hybrid instrument because it still has a very high level of subtlety, yet it can be amplified. It has a series of pickups inside of it, but it's a combination of a mechanical instrument where you're striking a key and then there's a hammer that is moving. So it is an acoustic mechanical instrument. But then each of the bars that are being struck are amplified. So it's really the perfect combination. Whereas other instruments, like keyboards, for example, it's not really mechanical. It's you're striking a key, and then it's being translated into binary code. So there's this slight delay. So it's just a little bit of a interference, I think, from the actual human response. But the Fender Rhodes, to me, is the ultimate hybrid instrument. I'm a huge fan of that sound.
I am too. I've noticed as I teach myself piano in my spare time on a electric keyboard, it doesn't sound completely warm. It can produce notes, all types of notes, but it doesn't have the same warmth that a Fender Rhodes has.
Yeah, it's like with a keyboard, you're hearing a reproduction, a digital reproduction, binary code, whereas with a Fender Rhodes, you are getting something that's vibrating on the inside, and that's where you're getting the sound from. That's the difference. It's with electronic instruments, there's nothing that's really vibrating. I mean, maybe a string is vibrating, but that's not the sound you're hearing. You're hearing that vibration is being translated into binary code, and you're hearing the binary code, as opposed to actually having a vibration, like from a vibraphone. When I'm standing over my instrument, I can feel it. When I strike a note, I can feel my shirt move a little bit. You can feel the wind, and there's this connection to a mechanical instrument. So my take on electronics is, first of all, my definition of music is just organized sound, so I'm very open-minded. But I do think electronic instruments do nip a lot of the subtlety out of music at times. So I'm very focused on making sure that when I do use electronic instruments, it's only to enhance the acoustic setting.
Why do you get inspiration from Stravinsky and Beethoven's music?
It's great music. I mean, it's Beethoven, what an incredible sense of melody and just beautiful sense of structure. And Stravinsky is just soulful to me in the same way that Charlie Parker was. I just always hear a real sense of culture in his music, like a real connection to his life and what was going through his mind. It just wasn't an intellectual undertaking. So he always inspired me, but harmonically as well. Just Stravinsky seemed to always be able to change direction. Like in Petrushka, it's like he's got like three different melodies going on at the same time in different keys and different tempos. And sometimes in jazz, we get stuck in doing simplistic forms that repeat over and over again. And I think having listened to a lot of classical music, Stravinsky in particular, when I started writing, I was never stuck to that type of limited form writing. I was always changing direction. Each solo is solos over a different section, as opposed to 12 bars, and we all play over the same thing.
What were the inspirations for Of Things to Come and Faded Beauty from the record Black Action Figure?
Wow. Well, Of Things to Come, I think when you're creating, sometimes it's really like you're waiting for music to come to you. I usually don't use the word creative, actually. I usually think of in terms of discovering. And at that point, I could tell that there was a certain direction that I was going to end up going. I wasn't there yet. I wasn't ready to go there. But that song, Of Things to Come, I thought was an indication of what I was hearing. And ironically, I do a record called Evolution with the band Blackout, which is, I think, reflective of that song, Of Things to Come. Which is why I called it that. I could tell years ago I wrote that when I was in college, and I could just see that, well, there's all different styles, but there's something that I can imagine that I can feel and hear really clearly in my mind. And over time, I'm going to get closer to that, and I think the latest record is much closer to that sound.
And why did you call the latest record Evolution?
Because, I didn't want it to be perceived as like a project. You know, sometimes people do a record and they use some electronic instruments, or they put a new band together and it's like, okay, I'm going to do this one project and it has a sound. What we really were doing is, with the quartet that I had before the band Blackout, we were out on the road and the music was evolving into what's documented on that CD. So it really was something that evolved very gradually, and it was inevitable. It's a combination of everyone's spirit, everyone's influences, and everyone really contributing so that it's really a band. So it truly was an evolution.
Why does John Coltrane for you embody the perfect combination of form and inspiration?
Well, I think you just said it, really. It's because, for me, if you have all emotion, it's really a balance of emotion and intellect, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. If you have all emotion, it's basically noise, right? It's all screaming, and or even if it's soft with all emotion but no structure, it's noise. If you have too much structure, it can actually dominate the content of the art itself, where it can become sterile. So I always felt that you really have to sit right in the middle. You can't over-intellectualize it, and you can't be all out completely emotional. If you sit right in the middle, I think that's how things are meant to be. And John Coltrane, in my opinion, is one of the very, very few musicians or artists, period, who are able to get to that level. I also think that concept transcends music. It's something that you'll notice in paintings. If you have a painting where the form really dominates the theme, it sort of takes away from the overall impact. Or if you have something that's just a little too emotionally laden, it can and lacks the form. It just doesn't work. The masterpieces throughout history all have the perfect balance. In art and dance and music, it transcends idiom.
We just celebrated the 40th anniversary of John Coltrane's Meditations on our station, and that's quite a powerful combination of form and emotion.
Oh my goodness. I mean, the other thing about John Coltrane that I've always found so inspiring is that he really captured the sound of a people. See, it sounds to me that, of course, he's very intelligent, obviously, a brilliant human being, but it sounds like he was telling the story of his people, of his experiences in the world and what was going on while he was alive. And he was using his intellect to tell that story in an interesting way, his intellect and his imagination. But it was never—I never got the impression listening to him or any of the greats that it was just for the sake of intellect. Because this is a hip chord progression. Oh, I thought of something that was really complicated and twisted, and I'm going to put that out. Mm-hmm. It always seemed like music. From when I hear Coltrane and musicians like that, it sounds like the music came from a larger group of people, and they're just sort of the messenger. The music is sort of coming through them. And a lot of times, we lose that sense of importance of being connected to a larger community. A lot of times we're creating in isolation. And the greats, like a Coltrane, it just doesn't sound that way. It sounds so open, so warm, so inclusive. It's incredibly beautiful.
Your interpretation of Summertime on the most recent record really moved me. Why did you choose to cover that tune?
Again, for me, music is really a matter of discovery. Sometimes things come to you, whether you're looking for it or not. And one night on the bandstand, I was playing this vamp that it just came to me, and then I was thinking, okay, I got to turn this into a song. I'm going to keep visiting it over and over again and see if I can hear a melody. I couldn't hear anything. So I don't know, maybe 3 weeks later, we happened to be in Germany or something, and I started playing that vamp again. And the band just joined in, and I heard the melody to Summertime. And it just fit so perfect. So then I just went home and put it all together and refined it. But it was really like keeping your ears open, being on the bandstand, and just being alert. And when you can hear it, you put it in spontaneously. So a lot of that arrangement evolved on the bandstand without any discussion at all. It's just I start playing it, everyone listens, and we respond, and then I sort of refine it into the arrangement that you hear today.